exciting to be here, and I'm glad you're here and a part of things this morning. I just want to talk a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit about marriage this morning. And my name is Gail Holcomb. We moved here in 76 from Atlanta, and I guarantee you if we'd stayed in Atlanta, we'd have been divorced. Too much going on up there, that's for sure. I have three children. My son lives in Houston with four of my grandchildren. He's a youth pastor there at an extremely large church. And I have a daughter here, and some of y'all may know Jana Park. She and her husband, Derek, are at Lions First Baptist, and they have a chicken farm. And she has one daughter, Kingsley. And then my other daughter, Julie, is married to Daniel McCullough, and they live in Cumming in Atlanta and have three very active boys. So we had them last weekend, so it was fun. We were tired. George and I have been married, it'll be 51 years in October the 3rd. That's a long time. We met, it's kind of interesting, we met at Daytona Beach our senior year of high school on our senior trip. We went to rival schools. And so I was with my group of friends. He was with his group of friends. And one of my friends was dating one of his friends. We didn't realize that. And so we met on the boardwalk in Daytona. And, you know, back in the day in Daytona, the boardwalk had a big dance floor at the end of the pier. I don't know if any of you remember. No, you probably may not remember that. I'm a little older than you are. Just a little bit. I am 70. I'll be 71 this year, so I'm way older than you are. But so we met there and spent some time together that night, but I was leaving the next morning to go back home. I had a job. And so he dumped me and started dating somebody else. I mean, and spent the week with them, you know, at the beach. So we ran into each other again about a year later. And I will give you a little bit of this. I'm going to sit there, but I got to move these flowers. I don't know where I'm going to move them, but I got to move them. In the Mad Hatter in underground Atlanta. So that'll tell you where our lives were at that point in time. Wasn't in a very good place. But that's where we ran each other again, and then we started dating in January, got married in October, and moved here in the next June. So kind of quickly speeding along there. We're going to look at just things marriage today and how we as women relate to things. You know, all of us as little girls, we play wedding, didn't you? You put the cape on with a towel or what you call that thing, veil. We dream of getting married to our Prince Charming, for our knight in shining armor on a white horse. It's just in our DNA. From the time we're small, we live in a steady diet of fairy tales and chick flicks. We want it all. The tall, handsome prince, the kiss, the spectacular proposal. And I'm amazed these days at these kids when they ask their dates to the prom. It's like, good gracious, this is a little elaborate. I mean, you know. But that's what we want. The extravagant ring, the castle, the kids happily playing in the perfectly manicured yard, and the happily ever after picture, right? I mean, that's what we're looking for. Cinderella, Snow White, Sleeping Beauty are all our goals because it's happily ever after. So we've already set ourselves up for failure, haven't we? I mean, we're in trouble already. Listen to this. A fairy tale is a made-up story designed to mislead. And we think fairy tales are great. But it's designed to mislead, so we are in trouble. And then we also look at our parents' marriage. We look at it for things we want it to be, things we don't want it to be. That goes both directions. My parents, I was very blessed. My parents were married 61 years before my dad passed. Sweetest marriage ever. My dad, when he played golf marshaled on Saturday at the golf course, we'd be in Atlanta visiting, and if he left, he did leave one day to go to work, he came back. I mean, he got around the drive and came back, and he said, I forgot to kiss Mom. So, I mean, that's the kind of marriage they had. I lived home 20 years, and I heard them fight, and they really didn't fight twice. My kids can't say that. I wish they could, but they can't. But that was the kind of marriage they had. So I had a great example of a marriage and what I wanted mine to be. My husband did not. He grew up in a pretty dysfunctional home. His mom became addicted to drugs, prescription drugs, very jealous. She had eight sisters. So they, when they went out to eat, they sat behind the restaurant because she didn't want his dad talking to the waitress. So, I mean, that's an extreme jealous. He took her to the hospital twice from trying to commit suicide. So that's the kind of place he grew up, not wanting to ever take anybody home because he never knew where we'd find them when he got home. So he latched on to my parents when we started dating. And my parents latched on to him too. So that was a really, really sweet time. But today we want to look at what a marriage is in God's design. And also we're going to travel down a few rabbit holes for some practical ways to enhance our marriages. The biblical design for marriage. I'm cracking up here, aren't I? Is that distracting to you? Okay. The biblical design for marriage is a lifelong covenantal union between one man and one woman designed by God to reflect Christ's love for the church. Now, very important side note. If you're already divorced, don't let the enemy hang you up here. You start from where you are and you move forward. You put the past in the past, you learn from the past. But then you just move forward. So that's where you are today. You start here and you move on. It involves leaving your parents and cleaving to your spouse, becoming one flesh and serving God together. That's what he wants for us, is for us to serve together. We weren't Christians when we got married, so we didn't have a very good strong foundation. It was 5 years into our marriage before we surrendered to Christ. And so a lot of water goes under that bridge in 5 years. And so we have had a lot of issues. Now, when we got married, George's mom was very possessive. Even though it was very dysfunctional relationship, she was very possessive. So she called every afternoon the minute George walked in from work. And you know how indignant that made me. It's like, look, lady, he belongs to me now. Back off. And so we had to work through some of that. She was having a hard time letting go. And so we worked through some of that. So I want us to take us just quickly through three marriages. This is not where we're going to land. I just want us to look at them. Abraham and Sarah. You know the story of Abraham and Sarah. God calls Abraham to leave, and he's going to give him a multitude of offspring. And so Sarah, he comes in and says, okay, we're leaving. I don't know where we're going. Now, how would you respond if your husband came in the door and said, all right, pack it up, we're moving? I'm like, I'm not going anywhere. I need to know exactly where we're going and what we're going to do. Well, she didn't respond that way. She trusted Abraham, and she followed him. Now, Abraham made some mistakes. He tried to pass her off as his sister. And that didn't go very well, but you know what? God took care of that. She did what he asked her to do, and God took care of the situation. But now things went south when she took things into her own hands. God had promised her offspring, and it was taking a long time. And aren't we impatient as women? Ooh, we are impatient. And so she decided she'd take matters into her own hands, so she sends her handmaiden in to him. And I just don't get that in the first place. But I'm not going there. Don't need any comparisons in my life. So anyway, she sends him into her handmaiden into him, and they have a baby. And you know what happens? We are still today. You have Isaac, because God did come through with his promise of Abraham, and Ishmael. And you know all this stuff we're dealing with today are consequences from those two tribes warring against each other. Now, how many years has that been? You know, when we take things into our own hands, sometimes we have severe consequences. And it doesn't affect just us. It affects everybody around us. So no, trust God. And I hope you're in a situation you can trust your husband. Another one is Ananias and Sapphira. They were a couple. They had some land. The Holy Spirit had fallen in Acts. And so everybody was taking care of everybody else, and which was is a great concept. So they sold their land, and then Ananias comes in to give whatever he's got money-wise and to give on the altar like everybody else is doing. Well, they didn't go in together. That's one thing I noticed. They didn't go in together. They went in separate. And so he went in, and he lies. And what happens? He's struck dead. Ooh, that's a pretty severe consequence right there. So he was struck dead on the spot. She came in a little later. What did she do? She also lies. And she was struck dead. So you see there are severe consequences. They knew the right thing to do, but didn't do it. And they took matters into our own hands. And that's what we don't want to do, is take matters into our own hands. And then the other couples, Mary and Joseph. You know, they followed God every step of the way. Joseph honored Mary. He, even though he was thinking about putting her away until the Holy Spirit, the angel spoke to him, he was going to do it quietly and be very respectful to her. And so he was honoring her. And that's one thing we've got to remember. When we follow God's plans, we're blessed. Doesn't mean it's easy, because it's not most of the time. Just God goes before us, and God will always go with us. He walked ahead of them and took them through it. All these three couples made decisions to follow God's plans or their own. When we follow our own, it ends in disaster every time. Every time. They all made decisions, and you'll hear me say throughout our little time together, love is a decision. It's a decision you make toward our spouse, our family, and toward others. And it's not always a warm, fuzzy feeling. You know, there's sometimes I love you, but I don't like you very much right this minute. And I'll tell you, I told Kate this morning, I said, you know what? George and I have fought more in the last 2 weeks than we fought in the last 2 years. It's like, whoa, come on now. And I mean, I know that's the enemy there. So let's look at, for just a minute, what Scripture says. And I'll have to put my little glasses on, I'm sorry. If you have your Bible and you want to turn, we're in Ephesians 5, 22 through 23. And listen to how much instruction there is for the woman and how much more instruction there is for the man. And it's a lot of difference. Wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord, for the husband's the head of the wife as Christ is the head of the church, his body for which he is Savior. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit to their husbands in everything. We're going to read the husband's part anyway, but just to get to the end. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, to make her holy, cleansing her for the washing with water through the word, and to present her himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. In this way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. After all, no one ever hated his own body, but he feeds and cares for it, just as Christ does the church. For we are all members of his body. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a profound mystery, but I'm talking about Christ and the church. However, each one of himself and the wife must respect her husband. So he had a lot more to say to husbands than he does to us. There's really just two things there. And I'm going to be real honest. The biblical basis for us is to submit and be devoted. Now, I cringe every time I hear that word, submit. How many else does that? It's like, ugh, I don't like that. That's not what I want to do. But it means freedom if I look at it from God's eyes. I don't have boundaries. It's not boundaries. It's just freedom if I'm looking at it. It means preferring one another in honor, accepting the authority or will of another person, voluntarily aligning yourself under the authority of another one. It implies cooperation, order for a greater purpose. You're not a doormat, so don't even go there. It's a choice to defer even when difficult, reflecting love, humility, and a trust in God's plans. It's putting others' needs before your own. You're a helper. You're a partner. I say this is freeing. Remember Sarah? You know, when Abraham sent her off as his sister, God came back and took care of Abraham, didn't he? She was under his authority. She did what he asked, and God took care of the situation. We are a helper. But I want you to know, we carry a lot of influence over our husbands. We need to handle that with care and be careful. We need to speak gentle and kind words. Proverbs says, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Also, the power of life and death is in this little thing right here. I can crush you in a heartbeat with my words, or I can lift you up and encourage you. And that's what we need to be doing with our husband, is understand that we need to handle our words carefully and gently. It makes a big difference. You know, we need to listen a lot more than we talk. We don't want to be fixed, do we? So we don't need to try to fix them either. We want the same thing. Now, I'm going to tell you, I've always been very independent, not very submissive. And so it took me about 20 years to decide to be submissive. That's a long time. But it took an accident to bring that to fruition. George and I were on our 20th anniversary, and we were in Panama City this time. Needless to say, we do like the beach. We were in Panama City, and we enjoyed waves and body. Some of y'all say, oh, don't get in the water. We love it. We body surf, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. So we were waiting on a wave. I was standing, I mean, he's right here. We're standing right by each other. And I said, okay. He said, let's catch one more. And I said, all right, one more. So I said, wait on that third wave right back there. He said, all right, I'll wait. We'll race in. And I'm like, this is great. Now, it's October because it was our anniversary. And so there's nobody on the beach. And there does happen to be a hurricane way on out there somewhere, you know. So the waves were huge. Panama City, a lot of times, doesn't have any waves. Waves were big. It was fun. And so George said, okay, here it comes. And I said, all right, let's go. So I took off, he took off, and we're both going. So I'm going, and I'm going, and I'm saying, and I'm thinking. And the last thing I remember thinking is, if this wave doesn't let me up, I'm going to drown. So, in the meantime, George comes up over here. He didn't catch the wave either. And he's thinking I'm way up there, and he starts looking for me and can't find me. So, way over here, I float over the wave face down. He swims over, grabs me, flips me over. I mean, my face is totally messed up. Skin's all off, nose is broken, mouth is totally ripped apart inside. I ended up with 33 stitches inside my mouth. It was just totally ripped apart. But anyway, at that point, he swam me in, came to, nobody on the beach, and I, being my independent self right there, said, you know what, I am not going to the hospital in a wet bathing suit in the cold. So I get in the shower. And I didn't wash my hair, but I did take a shower and put on some clothes. So we get to the hospital, and we get to the urgent care place, and they said, we can't help you. You got to go to the emergency room. So we went to the emergency room, got there. And I have a real hard time with needles. Nobody can ever find my veins. So I was freaking out. It's like, oh, please, don't. So George stops and prays for me. And at that moment, I began to let George take care of me. It took the accident, and he did. He prayed for me. That needle went in that arm first time. I ended up having to have surgery for him to stitch it all up. It was too much of a mess. And came out of surgery sick as a dog. He held my hair. I began to let him take care of me. God showed me through that accident I needed to allow George to take care of me. I needed to submit to that in my life. And so he even washed my hair. But that taught me a real lesson. And you got to remember, love is a decision. God intended the marriage to be physical, emotional, and a spiritual experience. And sex is a bond. Without sex, we're just roommates. And we will talk about that just a little bit. I won't embarrass you too bad. Your intimate times are just that, intimate and just between the two of you. And there are things that hinder your sexual relationship. And I want to tell you, secrets are at the top of them, okay? That means there's something between you. And if there's something between you, secretly, you can't be free and open. So know that. You can't reach the level of closeness you desire by keeping secrets. And I had some. Laura mentioned finding your worth and keeping up with the Joneses, and I had a credit card, and I ended up with about three, and I didn't let George know. It's like, oh, I can handle this. So here I slip back into that independent way, and so I charged stuff up, and you know what happens. You have to start borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. And then you borrow from Peter and Paul to pay John. So then you're in a big old mess. I don't want to give anybody any ideas, but I will tell you, I even went so far as to open a post office box because George couldn't get the mail. I mean, heaven forbid, we would really be in trouble. And I went that far. The enemy just started slowly, and I went down a path that would have destroyed most marriages. But my husband was committed, and we were committed, and we'll get to some of that in just a minute. And it was a big issue. I mean, and it took a lot for him to trust me again. And it's a long, hard road to rebuild that trust. But know that if you've got secrets, it's going to hinder you from having that real sweet, close, intimate relationship with your husband. So I would encourage you to try to get those out of the way. And what are the two things you fight about most in your marriage? Sex and money. I mean, that's just the bottom line. It's really the truth, isn't it? Is there anything else? Maybe children, discipline of children, but... it's sex and money. I mean, that's the two issues we all have. And we all as females do. And those are the hard things. But I want you to know there's some things only you can do for your husband. You are the expert on your kids. You need to help him understand them. Because you're the relational one. You are the expert. Nobody else can help him with that. You're the alarm system when it comes to other women. Now, you and I both know, I can tell if somebody's flirting with George. And George is my husband, and you probably have seen them. He's the good-looking guy that plays on the band sometimes with the white hair. And so that is my husband. And so he is flirted with quite often. I have to keep Laura back here in line sometimes. She likes to hear George sing. And so... but we are the expert there. We can say, just put up some guards here and do that. Say, I just don't feel real comfortable here. And he, of course, his first response is, oh, you're just crazy. It's like, no, I'm not. There's something in here that just says, she's wanting a little bit more. And the other thing is, within marriage is the only place you can have physical intimacy without any guilt. No guilt in that at all. It's important and will help you tremendously to realize how different men and women are. Men's identity, and God made us that different. I mean, that's the cool thing. We need to realize that, acknowledge that. Men's identity tends to come from their job and what they do. Ours is in our husband, our children, and our home, basically. Now, I know nowadays everybody works. Is anybody in here not work but me? A few, not many. That's just not the norm anymore. So I know women get some of their identity in the workplace, too. And that's another thing. If you're in the workplace, you need to put up some guards, just like you put them up for your husband. You can tell there's a gut feeling here saying, I don't need to stand right here and talk to him anymore. That's just a side note. Men think of one thing at a time. Am I correct? They can't spider think. I mean, you know, and we do. We're all over the place. I can think two or three things. I can talk to you about this, and I can talk to Holly about something else and still keep two conversations going. They just can't do it. Women are emotional beings, so we need to understand our differences. Men are analytical thinkers. Women are relational. Men accept things most of the time for how they are. Men think about sex 33 times per day. That's almost twice an hour. Women think about it once a day, and that's when we're asked for it. Is that not true? Is anybody tracking with me here? That's why we need to communicate. We've got to be able to communicate. We are so very different. And things are important to men. Our needs are very different. And we need to be willing to meet our husband's needs. Now, I'm going to go ahead and warn you about something. There's probably not anybody older than me in here, is there? No, you're close. As men get older, and I know you think as younger women, well, it'll get better. Nah, gets no better. Actually, they think they've got something to prove the older they get. So there's no hope there. I mean, not, you know, there's just going to be no hope there. So, and also you have to keep in your mind, physically, we don't have a release valve like they do. I know this is personal, but I mean, that's what we're talking about is marriage. They do. And I can tell about every 3 days, George gets a little ill. You know, you can just sense how long it takes your husband, and he needs that release. It's okay. Meet his needs. Love him. And it's good for his prostate. I'll just tell you that. I mean, it'll help him down the road maybe avoid prostate cancer, you know? So there are positive things to this aspect of things, but you need to communicate. You need to communicate. And there are things that men actually do because we know they're strong and all this better than we do. Now, it's hard for us to admit that sometimes, but there are. But I had one thing that I could do better than George, and it didn't go well to start with till he realized, you know what? And it was pack the car. I'm an organizer. And so I would lay in bed the night before and think, because I knew what we were taking. I knew what we were packing. We were packing golf clubs, beach chairs, towels, food, clothes, anything and everything you think of, snorkeling, paddle boards. So I'm thinking, okay, if we put this here and we put this here, then this will fit here and it'll do. So what usually happened, though, is we'd get all the stuff out into the car, George would look at it and said, this ain't all going in there. And I'm like, sure it is. I've already figured it out. So we learned that I was better at packing. Now, he has come a long way, and he can pack the car now. But still, I may have to come behind every now and then and tweak a few things. So my hats don't get smushed. But, you know, you communicate. You work things out. You figure things out. You have to, or you're living in a disaster. There are 3 reasons for failure in your marriage. And one of them is a lack of understanding. And understanding your differences. Because we think a certain way, we expect them to think a certain way. And they don't. And if we can understand that, it helps us understand them. Truthfulness is another thing that can kill a marriage. If you're not truthful. Now I know all of us have said before, when they ask, is that a new purse? No, it's been in the closet a long time. Has anybody done that?
Yeah.
I mean, we've all done that. No, I've had that a long time. You know, when we start with those small things, then they tend to build up to bigger things. So be truthful, even in the small things. Even in the small things. And the other thing is unrealistic expectations. We had a friend that was a good friend of George's and went to school with him. And David had the Gold Club in Atlanta, which was a strip joint in downtown Atlanta. And so George, after we moved, and George said, you know, I want to see if I can meet David this weekend and just, you know, share Christ with him, see what's going on, and see if I can, you know, get any leeway there. So he called David, and David said, yeah, meet me down at the club tomorrow night. And George said, no, I don't think that would go over too well with Gail. I said, you're right, that was a wise decision. And so they met the next day at Dairy Queen for lunch. And so they're talking and sharing, and, you know, George is sharing about what God's showing us in church. And David immediately says, you know what? My girls do more than any Christian organization around. We have battered women's shelters. We have food drives. And he went on and on and on. And George stopped him and he said, you know what, David? Isn't it ironic that the very women that are being battered, their husbands have stopped by your club that afternoon on their way home. They've had a drink. They watched a female dance for them. Beautiful body. So they come home with expectations. And their wife meets them at the door with the baby, no makeup on, and then they're angry and they get abused. So unmet expectations can really kill a marriage. And even as women, we have expectations that our husbands just can't meet. Christ has got to be the center of this. He's the one that, as Laura shared earlier, that fills that void and fills that hole. We've got to give up our expectations. And you know what? When you do, it frees the other person up and it allows God to work in me. Unmet expectations is the third one. Another thing you can do is find your spouse's love language. I don't know if y'all have heard about those, but it is important. Know what makes them feel loved and honored and seen. What makes me feel loved is very different from what makes George feel loved. What makes me feel loved is, man, you just washed the dishes in the sink. Ooh, thank you very much. What makes George feel loved is for me to walk by and touch his arm. Physical touch. If they're very different, learn. You've got to learn. You've got to study. I know we think we're all out of school, but, you know, we should constantly be learning and studying our husbands and seeing. And it allows us to be all we can be. First and foremost, though, our foundation must be set on Christ. Marriage should be built on Christ. And there are three C's of marriage. One's a covenant. And God ordained the first covenant. And a covenant is a sacred binding. It's a commitment before God. And it's not just a legal binding. It is a deep spiritual commitment. God orchestrated the first covenant with Noah. It's very, very serious. You exchange rings. You remember Jonathan and David, they exchanged coats, they exchanged rings. My family's your family. We're apart together. And it is a very, very serious thing. The other C is a commitment. We're dedicated, and this is what commitment means, dedicated to a cause or actively engagement or obligation. It's a pledge or an undertaking. It's a loyal, deep, active, wholehearted devotion. It's not 50-50. It's 100%. I'm all in if you don't give but 10. That's commitment. If you give 10, okay, you're accountable for what you do. I'm responsible for how I act and respond. And it's all in. And we've got to be sure our heart and our motives are correct. How do I show commitment? You make time for them. I know George loves quality time, so he likes to play golf. Now, he has his golf time with his friends, but he'll say, oh, come ride with me today. And it's like, oh. But, I mean, now I've got a list of things to do. I've got my agenda, my schedule, but you know what? It's more important that he knows that he's important to me and that I'm committed to him. And so I said, yeah, I'll go with you. So we'll ride the golf course. He'll play, I'll drive, I'll talk about how great that shot was. And, you know, tell him how good it is. And, oh, we don't have to count that one. You know, that kind of thing. And so, and go from there. So it's important we spend time doing the things that they enjoy doing. We remember things that are important to them. I try to remember things that are important to my kids, too. I know my son-in-law hates coconut. So when I'm cooking, I try not to do anything with coconut in them, just to honor the him. Do things and remember things they like, things they don't like. George does not like for me to try new dishes. But I still do that sometimes. It's like we can't eat the same thing every 7 nights a week. So I do try things sometimes. But it's important that we remember. That lets them know that they're important enough for you to remember some small things. I've got a friend. She hates football. If her husband turns it on, she walks into the other room. I'm like, you know, I may not just love it. Well, and I happen to love football. But I may not just love watching the golf match. But, you know, sometimes I will. Or sometimes George will say, well, you got something you want to watch? Well, and yesterday was one of those. I said, no. I said, why don't you turn on the Arnold Palmer match that's on in Florida this weekend? He said, really? I said, yeah. He said, you going to watch with me? I said, yeah, I'll stay. I said, right here and watch with you. That lets them know that they're important to you, that you care about what they think, where they are, and what's important. Another thing is, don't flirt with another guy. You know, that's a killer right there. And I know sometimes we don't mean to, but it's hard to be flattered and not flirt back. I mean, it's difficult. We all want that pat on the back. We all want somebody to notice us. I mean, that's just the bottom line. We do. We're women. We do. And a big thing is don't criticize or belittle them in public. If you want to deflate your husband, you know my husband don't help around the house at all. Well, he may not, but that's not for your friend, no. It belittles him. It crushes their spirit, and that's the last thing we want to do is crush their spirit. Commitment is active. It's something we do. It's not just a word we sit on and say, oh, yeah, I'm committed to you. It's activity. It's something we act in. It's a decision, and it's usually a sacrifice. I mean, it just is. It involves communication. It involves talking things through, figuring things out. It's not always easy. Sometimes it's really hard. And it's based on a decision, not a feeling. And us women, we live and get up all in our feelings. And you know what? Marriage can't be based on feelings. It just can't be. Yes, sometimes we have warm, fuzzy feelings, and it's awesome. But most of the time, we must decide, I am committed. I am in this 100%. And let's go. It's a daily decision. It doesn't happen one time and I'm done. You know, I decided when we got married, I love you, I'm in this, let's go. As the guys tell Laura, let's go. It's a daily decision. I have to decide every day. Just like when we get up in the morning, we decide to die to ourselves and follow Christ. We've got to make a decision to love our husbands and honor them. And respect them. Commitment is a choice, and choice has been my word for years. I mean, that is my life word. It's a choice, and it's one I make, and it's one I have to make. I make choices all the time, good or bad. Some of them are good, some of them are bad, but it is a choice, and it's a choice I'm responsible for. Love is a decision, and you've got to remember that. Love is a decision. Another place is being content. The other third C is contentment. Contentment is a state of happiness. It's satisfaction. And contentment is also a choice. 5 characteristics of contentment are being satisfied, humble, a lack of envy or greed. And that's so hard as women not to live there. we all are envious of other people and what they have and what their husband does and what kind of car they drive. And, oh, don't I like her outfit better than what I got on? And, but it's patience and discipline, and it's acceptance of our circumstances. I learned contentment from my mom and watching her life. She lived in Atlanta, and my dad died in 97. In 99, she decided she would move here, next door to us, and she did. And it was the best thing that ever happened. But I watched her all her life be content in whatever circumstance she found herself. She said, I had a wonderful life for 61 years with your dad, and I've had a wonderful life here for 16. But she found contentment where she was. She said, I can be content in whatever my circumstance is. But it's a choice to be content. She could have been next door and been mad and angry all the time. They drug me off down here, and I don't have any friends, I don't have anything. But she wasn't. She was content. She had us, and she knew we loved her, and she settled and chose to be content. But being content focuses on gratitude. If you want to be content in your life and in your marriage and where you are, you've got to focus on being grateful for what God's given you. Being grateful for the husband you have. And I understand some of you in here are in hard places. I do know that. And we'll pray for you. And you need. Sometimes you may need to get out of where you are if you're in a hurtful situation. But that's a totally different situation here. Okay? But most of us need to find contentment and gratefulness in our heart instead of always griping and complaining about everything. Contentment doesn't mean you don't try to improve. You do. You do still try to do that. Just the opposite. You're just at peace with where you are. And boy, a peaceful heart. Oh, isn't that good? When we get all stirred up with everything going on in our lives, it just turns our marriages and our homes upside down. Another thing, comparison kills contentment. So if you're always comparing yourself, you're always comparing your marriage. I wish my husband did that for me. I wish my wife did that. I wish we could do that. I wish we could go there. You just can't compare. You've got to be content with where God's got you. Now, there are things you can change. You can be the wife that you're wanting him to follow through as a husband, and he might jump on board with you. You be what God's called you to be. Contentment promotes tolerance and understanding. You learn to be tolerant. You have an attitude of optimism. You're not gloom and doom if you're content. You're usually pretty happy with the situations and what's going on in your life. This last year, it's been a year ago in March, we discovered George had cancer, squamous cell carcinoma, a place in his neck, and then ended up a place on his back of his tongue. And so we've been through, June and July, two different surgeries, and we're fortunate enough to not have to do chemo, but did do radiation. And so I found myself in a hard place. George is very outgoing, outspoken, loves people. And when we got in the midst of radiation, it totally changed his personality because of the physical things going on in his body, okay? The not being able to talk, coughing up stuff all the time. So he got to where he didn't want to go out. Now, if you know my husband, which a lot of you in here did, that is not George. He is out there, part of things and everything. But he got to the place it was just sit home. So you know what? We just sat home. That was what he needed for me to do. He didn't say it. And he said, oh, go on, go do this, go do that. And I said, no, I'm good. Not that we did anything. For about 2 months, he sat in his chair, I sat in mine. Did we really do much of anything? No. But I was there. And I was content to be there. I was the support system. I was not, oh, I hate being here. What in the world are we doing? Griping and complaining all the time. And it was this is where we are. I'm content with the circumstance because we can't change it. And let's just do what we can to make things better. And so that's where you kind of have to be. And that we lived that this last year. And we're still living some of that. He lost and George has never been real heavy by any means, but he went from like 192, he now weighs 146. And he can't seem to gain any. Now, we finished radiation the end of October, but can't seem to gain any weight. And he is being able to eat and do, and he does sing. And he's finally got his voice back, so he is singing a little bit again. He's a little self-conscious about it, so he's working through some of that. But we can't get any weight on him. And I'll be honest, and we were laughing about it yesterday. He said, "I feel like I look like a Holocaust survivor." And I said, "Well, you kind of do." And so we had a good laugh there, you know. But it's just one of those things. You learn to be content with where you are. And that will give you peace. And that will encourage your marriage. And then you can be all God's called you to be. I want to read you something kind of as we close. Chuck and Cynthia Swindoll's words on a covenant marriage. This is his response. And I would love to, for my husband to say this about me. I'm not sure he would, but I would love it. And just really focus in on some of these things. She hears my secrets and keeps them sealed. In other words, she doesn't tell them. She knows my faults and forgives them always. She feels my failures and apprehensions and encourages me through them. This is the quiet beauty of a love that has weathered 70 decades together. A love not built on perfection, but on faithful presence. Faithful presence. On knowing each other fully and choosing grace repeatedly. On private conversations that protect dignity while pursuing growth together. She really loves Christ, and she wants excellence for me. When I haven't done my best, she knows it, and don't we all? And she'll approach me all alone, never to embarrass me, and will say, "We probably need to talk." She gently encourages me to do my best and offers to help. God's faithfulness is on display when two imperfect people, and here's my word, choose to extend grace day after day, year after year. The Swindoll's marriage reflects what happens when Christ becomes the foundation. When mercy shapes how we respond to each other's faults. When his love teaches us to encourage rather than condemn, and when his example shows us what it means to honor our vows through every season. Their story reminds us that lasting love isn't about finding the perfect person, but allowing God to transform us into people who love like Christ with patience, forgiveness, and unwavering commitment. Romans 12:10 says, "Honor one another above ourselves. Be devoted to one another in love." Love is a decision. Aren't we glad Christ made that decision to love us unconditionally? And because of that love, we can also love others. Let's pray. God, I thank you for the covenant of marriage. I thank you that you've ordained it. You put it in order, and it has a balance. And you want to use our marriages to save the world. You want to use our marriages to show others what it means to love unconditionally. You want to use our marriages to show our kids what marriage should look like. And Lord, I just confess, so many times mine hasn't, but I thank you for your forgiveness and your grace. And I thank you George has extended that many, many times over our 50 plus years. I pray for each female in this room that their heart's desire would be to love you first and then make a decision to love their husband at all costs. 100%, regardless of their husband's input, that they would just make the choice and the decision to follow your ways. And when we follow your ways, God, I thank you so. Things mostly always turn out wonderful. It may not be easy, and most of the time it's not. But you walk with us, you walk before us, you walk behind us, and you give us peace. When we settle in to your contentment, to our contentment with you, and to our commitment to just love. It's in Christ's name. Amen.